One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. And we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. Every week we talk about how to love ourselves, others, and higher nature, how to improve our finances, relationships, spirituality. And today I'm very fortunate to have a very esteemed guest, Dr. John Gray, who's one of the most acclaimed self-help authors in the century. His book, the classic bestseller, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, has been rated as one of the top 10 influential books in the last quarter century. He has written over 20 books in 45 languages, and he deals with helping people with love, relationships, and health. Welcome, John, to the show.
Well, thank you so much. This show's right up my line.
I know, perfectly. Now, I don't know if you remember, back in 1999, you actually wrote a cover board for my book, Love Types, which actually deals with compatibility in Myers-Briggs and Jungian types.
Yes, very good, very good.
And then it talks about, you know, the introvert, extrovert, thinker, feeler. And back in those days, it was said that about one-third of males are feelers, and one-third of females are thinkers. And then two-thirds of males are the logical type, and two-thirds of females are the emotional type. You've written a new book called Beyond Mars and Venus, which actually is a very lovely book. And you actually talk about kind of almost a gender revolution, kind of a reversal, where males are more feminine energy and women are more masculine energy. So I want to ask you, why is that, and is that a good thing for society?
Okay, so first of all, when you talk about all the love types and the personality types, what I tried to do back then, but it was too complicated, yes, was to look at, even when you found those 30% of men who are more emotional, how they process those emotions will be different from women. So there is, so we have what's called personality or love types, which are differences, and that's not the gender, although gender sort of, they intermix. So when it comes to biology, that's where my message is more rooted in. Is in terms of biology, if you're emotional, your body's making estrogen. If you're logical, your body's making testosterone. If you feel I need you, I depend on you, your body's making estrogen. If you feel I'm solving your problem, your body's making testosterone. If you feel dependent on something at that moment, your body will be making estrogen. And if you feel independent, I can do it myself. Look what I can do. Look what I've done. Your body's making testosterone. So now, biologically speaking, men require to feel well-being 10 to 50 times more testosterone than a woman, depending upon their body type. Now, even 10 times is a huge difference. But if I was to be a body type genes that made more muscle mass, it could be 20 or 30 times more. If it's a type which is, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger or something like that, your body needs to make 40 to 50 times more testosterone. Otherwise, you're depressed. Otherwise, you have a heart attack. So you have to use those muscles. And what we find is that things that create testosterone in both men and women are whenever you're feeling successful, when you're feeling detached, when you're feeling logical, when you feel independent, all these types of activities, but most important is success and needed. I feel needed and I'm successful. Testosterone goes up. So men have a greater need for that than women. Women, on the other hand, they often, well, they need 10 times more estrogen to have well-being, and they need 20 times more estrogen in order to experience falling in love. So to fall in love is not a unique thing. You have to be in the presence of a man who, for whatever reasons, there's lots of reasons, makes you feel so safe that you can depend on him for something very, very important for you. Okay, that's the dynamic of pumping estrogen up. You know, we all depend on each other for certain things, but when you find someone special that you can really feel safe with, open yourself up and feel I can depend on him to be there for me when I need him. That's gonna raise your estrogen twice as much. So then it's 20 times more than a man.
Now, John, I work with Dr. Pat Allen. You may have heard of her. She does the kind of stuff. And, you know, the masculine energy in the female and the feminine energy in the male. But the issue she has, she says a lot of dominant women or strong-minded women today have this masculine energy in the workplace. And then when they get home, they bring it in and they have problems in relationships. So she says something like, put your, you know, balls on the wall, as she says, and be more feminine. But then that's a whole different concept. And maybe a dominant woman would have an issue with the feminine energy man in not respecting him, but then if she has a dominant energy man, she might fight and butt heads. So what's the solution for that? A woman that has more masculine.
Again, what I see is that when women are on their male side, if they're going to be happy in life, they need to balance it with their female side, which is just what Pat said, is you need to take your balls off at the door and find your female side, not just for your husband, but for yourself. Otherwise, you're going to be thinking about work all the time. You're going to be thinking about problems that have to be solved all the time. You're going to be feeling a pressure, which is your estrogen levels. And you can measure in these women, their estrogen levels are low compared to what they should be for that woman. Yes. And therefore, she doesn't feel love. She doesn't feel appreciation. She doesn't feel I can depend on my man. She looks down at him, which is when you said the thing about how can she respect him. Yes. But the key to respecting a man is not even so important. It's appreciating a man. She doesn't appreciate, like, oh, I have to take care of him. Oh, you know, I was just counseling a couple. And they, again, they had the inevitable problem. Unless they have really good communication skills that support hormonal balance. She's making more money. He's not. He's doing more what he loves. He enjoys doing what he does, but he makes no money. She's out there doing something she doesn't enjoy. She's busting her balls to accomplish the goal. He says, great, honey. Thanks so much. And she just finally gets sick of it. Now, turn that picture around. I go out in this world. I bust my balls. I do all kinds of stuff. But I come home. My wife is happy. She says, oh, I'm so lucky I have you. I went shopping today. We kids, we did this. I feel like Superman. So that woman who made all that money, she doesn't feel like Superman. She feels used. So there's a way around this, which is what you asked. But we first have to understand the problem. Yes. The problem is not the roles we pick. It's the problem of how we have hormonal imbalance in our bodies. And I'm glad Pat says, leave your balls at the door, because in the past, Pat used to say that you're going to be the male energy or the female energy. It's a choice. Uh-huh. Well, it's not a choice. It's a biological reality, but you have a choice in order to find your balance. So you can choose if you're a woman who requires more estrogen to be happy, to be in love, to be fulfilled, and to have orgasms. You have to have female energy for that. Yes. And you're doing male stuff during the day. You have to find a way back to producing estrogen. And men, if you're staying at home and you're taking care of the kids, you have to be able to find your way back to producing your masculine energy. Otherwise, the passion will go away in the relationship. The connection will go away. And the dissatisfaction will dramatically go up.
Yeah, because I think I like the idea that you're balancing these hormonal chemicals. And you talk about males, they need to go in their cave to replenish their testosterone. You talk about either watching or playing sports or driving if you're not in a rush, joking with other guys. But I'm thinking that there could be like an introvert or even a so-called sensitive male that may want to pray or meditate. And that could be possibly that same thing, right? Going into
Absolutely. I meditated 4 hours today. And then you see my passion coming out. It gives me so much testosterone. It's unreal.
You said that the woman needs to let the man do it without guilt. Because I noticed that some women get angry when the guy goes away. And they don't realize that he needs that for his testosterone.
Well, that's why I think one of the maybe six reasons men are from Mars, women are from Venus became this international phenomena is because I'll just do two of the points. One of the points, men need to go to their cave. Yes. When a man pulled away, women always took it personally. It's like, oh, he doesn't love me. Because when a woman goes to her cave, usually it's because she's dissatisfied with her partner or she's angry with him. And so she withdraws. But a man requires it to find his balance again. Now, some men require more, some men require less. Now, the men who require less, they run into a problem because they already have more sensitive qualities. They're going to be more emotional men sometimes. And so therefore, they're going to want to talk more. And when you talk, it increases estrogen. So he has to make sure he bumps his testosterone up. Then he can talk more about his feelings.
No, are you a sensitive guy or a logical guy? How would you classify yourself?
I'm both. I'm born, if you know anything about astrology, my sun and moon are conjunct, which means the masculine and feminine are balanced in me.
You're Gemini or what is your?
No, I'm Capricorn, high achiever.
Oh, okay.
High achiever. What's that?
Yeah, I know about Capricorns. My dad.
Yeah, we keep going and going and going nonstop.
Now, you know, for the females, you say that basically they need a hug. They need a guy to listen to their emotions without judgment. And you have an exercise in your book. You talk about they could talk about 8 minutes for something negative, but not about the guy. And then 2 minutes positive and then get a hug and then leave. Why is that so effective?
Oh, so what we talked about in the beginning, thanks for taking some of the key points in that book. When women are on their male side and really our culture has pushed women onto their male side. Okay. Their status is all about, I'm independent. I've got my own job. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the culture is not supporting them and going to their female side. And the right. female side, and I won't say for all women, but for many, when the help of women come back to her female side, the first thing is hugs. Hugs is affection, compliments, touching in a non-sexual way. Those behaviors stimulate oxytocin. Now, most people heard about oxytocin. It lowers stress in women. They think it lowers stress in men, but it doesn't. It actually lowers testosterone. If your testosterone is too high, it will lower it to a nice level. Otherwise, oxytocin is primarily a function. It increases estrogen in your body. So if you hug her in a non-sexual way for a second, nothing happens. It takes 3 to 6, even about 6 seconds before you get a response. If she's had a particularly stressful day, it might just have a little response. But if it's regular and regular, something she's anticipating, then it has a bigger response. What's interesting is they found that low estrogen women, oxytocin has a little effect on them. They have to have a certain amount of estrogen already, and then oxytocin primes the pump. But if she's continuing to get those hugs, she will eventually, her body will look forward to it. So the hug is the first thing. The next thing is, and it just has to be 6 seconds, affection, maybe a compliment occasionally, like, I love you, you're beautiful. You know, these things all stimulate oxytocin. Then the next thing is talking. I call this Venus talk. Now there's an art to it, which is takes more time to explain, but you gave the summary, which is basically share any frustrations, disappointments, concerns, and worries that you have from the day for about 8 minutes. 2 minutes on frustration, 2 minutes on disappointments, 2 minutes on concerns and worries, and 2 minutes on things you're embarrassed about, regrets. Now, that's optimal. You don't have to follow that structure, but I have a technique where you do it and do it, then it becomes very natural, and you make sure those different emotions are expressed. All about things that have nothing to do with him. If you complain to your husband, it's going to lower his testosterone. He's going to lose interest in you. It's death. It's death to the relationship to complain about your husband. But women are addicted to it. It becomes a loop. You see, the brain has a bias for focusing on negativity, and you get a reward for it. If you focus on negativity, your brain produces more dopamine, just like cocaine. This is a bias. And so talking about what you're upset about becomes an addiction. Particularly if it's motivated by wanting to change your partner. So when women have low estrogen, they always want to always dissatisfied with their partner. They want to change him. They want to improve him. They want to correct him. So what happens is you express these emotions about something else that he has nothing to do with. And you say, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to say anything. I just want to vent these feelings and I'll feel better. Now you have to give him evidence that you'll feel better. After you go through it for about 8 minutes, then you have to say, oh, I'm so grateful. My life is wonderful. I've got this. I've got this. I've got this. I've got you. And you're an amazing listener. And you go in for a hug. You get that hug again to let him know he did a great job. And then you go away. Wow. You go away because he's going to want to try to solve all those problems. And that's not what you need. You need to be able to vent without any intention to try to change him. And if you vent your feelings about him, it's always you want him to change. So if you want him to change, go vent your feelings to somebody else, but not to him. And if you take complaining out of your relationship, women, you'll see a whole new man.
It's pretty powerful, except it takes a certain amount of discipline for her to pull back from criticizing him.
It really does. There's a thing. And
for him to listen to her without, you know, getting involved in trying
Oh, it's very, very hard. But it for women, the hard thing for them is like it's an addiction, okay? Negativity is an addiction. It produces more dopamine. This is all proven. Complaining becomes addictive. The more emotionally bonded you are to someone, the more dopamine gets produced. Yes. The more addicted you get to it. Your brain gets into a loop where now you're always looking for things to complain about. Kind of like I have a little addiction. Sometimes I rub my nose, you know? So I'll just unconsciously be doing my nose thing. It's because there's a little bit of dopamine gets produced. People, they look at their phone. They're always looking at their phone because it produces dopamine.
Right.
Well, complaining is a bigger dopamine. So the brain now is looking for things to be upset about. So, oh, you didn't do this. You didn't do that. And it will flip. It will go around and around.
You gotta give her some chocolate instead. You know, don't complain against me. I'll give you chocolates or something.
Well, what she has to do is, this is for her. You can't change her. She has to recognize this is her problem. She can change it. But it takes about 6 months to give up our addiction to complaining. It's amazing. Wow. If you just notice it and the first step in it is never complain to the person you're upset with. Then what you're doing is sharing. Sharing doesn't overstimulate the brain. Right. Complaining overstimulates the brain. Complaining, let's say we're in a restaurant. I'm going to explain the distinction between sharing and complaining. Okay. If we're in a restaurant and we're having soup and I say, hey, is your soup cold? Mine's kind of cold. And you go, yeah, it's kind of a cold. What are we doing? We're sharing a discontent. Just a little bit. Now we say, waiter, waiter, my soup is too cold. That's complaining. I want him to do something about it. He should solve the problem. He should. And, you know, women will say, I want him to solve the problem. Then they say, I don't want him to solve the problem. Then they say, I just want him to feel empathy. Then they say, well, he doesn't feel empathy enough. You know, they're wanting to get you to change your behavior. Any intention to change somebody's behavior by sharing emotion makes us addicted to emotions.
Very interesting. Yeah. To give up that negative addiction. I talk about that in my book, Invincible You, is one of the keys, but you have to fill it with something positive. You know, like gratitude, they say, reduces depression by 30%. If you keep a gratitude journal, write three things you're grateful for every day.
And there also another one said that if you write just three things you're grateful for every day, you'll work out more physically.
Oh, wow. That's nice. Now, Jeff, one thing I find interesting, you talked about the old role mates versus soulmates. Role mates, a traditional man is the provider, woman the caregiver, and then soulmates, you said, is more intimacy and also authenticity. But I'm also looking at personality type. There are some people that we call the security seekers, the sensing judgers that actually like having traditional styles. And some parts of the U.S., like Midwest and South, they still have some of that traditional relationships. Now, is it possible to have a role mate relationship in today's society that's successful or not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the distinction there is a role mate relationship. It's primarily dependent upon the roles, where a woman depends on a man and a man depends on her to be happy because he's doing his role.
Yes.
Okay. And a soulmate is where you're providing a new kind of emotional support, a new kind of emotional support that will sustain the passion in your marriage.
Yes.
Now, you can have a traditional relationship that's also a role mate. You just have to know the new skills to add to your traditional roles.
Sure.
Traditional roles are fine. And actually, it's much easier to do my process of having lasting passion if you do have a traditional relationship. But in spite of not having a traditional relationship, see, traditional relationships were invented because it made it easier for people to be happy. But today, to be happy, people want to be happier. That's part of freedom. You know, we want greater freedom. We want orgasms. We want sex. We want affection. We want to feel like we felt when we fell in love. So that's a higher standard, a higher bar. Yeah. And so if you're in a traditional relationship, you learn these new skills, it will take you to that higher bar. If you're in a non-traditional relationship, you have a series of new obstacles to achieve that higher level. But you can still overcome them and get to the higher level.
Right. You have some intuitive and counterintuitive points in your book. I like the intuitive is happy wife, happy life, because when she's happy, he has more testosterone. He's more attracted to her. But then you said something different. I thought it was interesting. You said that when the man tells a woman who's stressed that he's happy, she gets pissed off at that.
Why? Yes. Well, sometimes when you give the first step, you can't always get it. So I'm glad you asked the question. I found this out in my own marriage. So I'll just tell the story. Stories reveal it all. But when I became very successful, I started staying at Four Seasons. I'd fly first class. I'd meet celebrities. Sure. And I'd go away for 3 or 4 days. And Bonnie stayed at home with the children. Sometimes the children are sick. The plumbing doesn't work. There's a leak in the roof. So she's filled with all these problems and I'm not there to help her with them. And I come home and I say, oh, I had the most amazing time. I saw so-and-so, I met so-and-so. And because she was going through all these problems, I watched her like a black cloud come into the room because, you know, she's like, oh, you have all the fun. Do you know what I do? And then she shares all these feelings and everything. Okay. If she's happy, my happiness makes her happy. Okay, without a doubt. But if she's unhappy, she doesn't need to have you focus on how happy you are. That doesn't make her happier. The reason we feel so happy when women are happy is because we take credit for it. See, we feel we're providing for her. So if she's happy, I mean, she's my project, okay? This is like, if my wife is happy, I'm doing a good job. If I'm doing a good job, my testosterone goes up. If I'm happy for my wife and she goes, oh, I made him happy, that raises her testosterone, which is good if she has high estrogen. But if she has no estrogen, that high testosterone pushes estrogen down. And so she becomes more unhappy. So I bring it back to biology.
Room service was terrible. I hated the food. I had a lousy time. Is that the idea?
What I do is she says, how's your trip? I said, yeah, oh, it was really hard. You know, I had to wait for the plane, the room service. They didn't bring my food. I expected this. Oh, there wasn't the turnout. I always focus a little on the negative first.
You bring it down a little bit, right?
That's right.
Exactly. Now, counterintuitive, what I like is something like you said listening is actually a masculine trait because we think of listening as a passive. We said you penetrate someone when you listen.
Yes.
And the other thing you said was that testosterone is actually a good hormone. We think of it as being aggressive and violent for men. You said it's a way to serve women and protect them. So tell me
Now I'm coming back to biology here. Okay. That's a very, if you don't have the science, people go, what are you talking about? Yes. All violence and aggression in men occurs when his estrogen levels are going up.
Yes.
His testosterone's going down. That's a biological reality because what's happening when men have estrogen go up, there's a cortisol response in the body. When men go into the cortisol response, it's fight or flight. It means you don't know what to do. What you're doing isn't working, so now you're in danger. Right. See, if I'm cool, calm, and collected, I'm not in danger. I could be in danger, like driving my car really fast is extremely dangerous. Like deer could run out, yes. A car could run a red light. Riding a car is very dangerous, but we don't feel threatened because we feel we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
If you feel you know what you're doing, you won't have a cortisol response if you're a man. As soon as you lose confidence that I don't know what to do about this now, and if you're somewhat in a situation of danger, which is your wife's not loving you and you don't know what to do, then you have a cortisol response. And cortisol causes testosterone to go into estrogen. It raises testosterone, which then turns into estrogen and causes you to lose control. See, this part of the brain turns off when you have a cortisol response. This part of the brain in a man turns off when his estrogen goes too high. This part of the brain turns off when a woman has testosterone going too high. So she loses her ability to love. We lose all of our higher functions where we're in a cortisol response. And a cortisol response also causes our hormones to go out of balance. But our hormones can go out of balance without a cortisol response. See, that's the thing I'm talking about here. Just spending too much time, if you're a woman, on your male side causes your estrogen to go down. And that then keeps you from having an open heart. If you're a man, you're too far on your female side. So one of the other little points, you pulled out the good ones. Another one, if a man is upset emotionally and he talks, his estrogen will go up more. So it's the worst thing for a man when he's already out of balance is to talk. If a man is in a cortisol response, particularly then, if he talks to the person he's upset with, he will only become more and more upset. At that point, the only thing that would lower his upset is if a woman was to completely yield and say, you're right, I'm bad, I deserve to be punished, you are my king, you are my authority. And that's because that's what women did in the past, because men would have these cortisol responses. The only thing that calms them down is you are my ruler, and that would pump up his testosterone. So insecure men are not trained men, but man, these insecure men, they are bullies. You know, they're just aggressive. They don't care about anybody. They don't think about anybody. They pump themselves up because they're so insecure inside. Right. And it's a biological condition that causes people to become yielding and dependent. And then they get what they want. Now they go further out of balance.
Interesting. The other thing I liked about your book and what you're saying is that you distinguish between love and attraction. You say a woman can love a male in his feminine side, but she may not be attracted to him. And a man can love a woman in her, you know, strong masculine side, but not be attracted to her. So it's interesting that you're kind of distinguishing a little bit of that difference there.
Yeah, love is you can love someone. How many couples, I mean, we now have this thing, which is very sweet, conscious uncoupling, which is, I love my partner, which is not working anymore. Oh, okay, really? So you can love someone and not feel attraction to them. But what happens is, again, coming back to experience, there's different levels of love. Okay, now some people have written books saying love is not a feeling. These are men who never felt love. Okay, so you know people write from their own experience and some maybe some research as well. But love is a feeling, and what it does when you have that feeling, it evokes certain behaviors for sure. Okay, you're more compassionate, you're more empathetic, therefore you want to give more and you're more generous in doing so forth. So there's many qualities to love. There's different aspects of love. There's respect is a form of love. Understanding is a form of love. Compassion is a form of love. Appreciation is a form of love. Happiness is a form of love. So this is a big word, love. Then we have the word attraction. Now, attraction only occurs, I can't say only, because it can temporarily occur in the newness of a relationship. And the newness of a relationship, the brain's producing dopamine, that will raise the testosterone in a man, even if he has low testosterone. So if a man tends to be overly emotional, remember you said some men are more emotional. That doesn't mean he's more on his female side. It just means he has more emotions. But if he leans too far in that direction, then he will become too feminine. Okay, so too feminine. So it's always a balance. There's nothing wrong with emotion, nothing wrong for women who are not emotional. It's finding your right balance for you. So if he's too far on his female side, he will be attracted to a woman who's too far on her male side. A woman who's on her male side will be attracted to a man too far on his female side, because by connecting together, then there's a balance that occurs for a short period of time. But then there's a repulsion that will occur as well, because she doesn't want to go. The reason she's on her male side is she doesn't want to go to her female side. And the reason he's on his female side too far, he don't want to go to his male side. So when that balance starts to occur, they back up by finding criticism. The brain just goes right into judgment and criticism, not good enough and all that stuff.
Now, John, I wish you'd help us solve a conundrum in sex lives of men and women. Apparently after sex, you say there's a lot of oxytocin released in the males and they need to go away to, you know, replenish their testosterone. And the woman, they like that oxytocin. So if you remember the scene from when Harry met Sally, Harry was a bachelor, right? And he said to Sally, after sex, how long do you want to be held? Is 30 seconds okay? No, you want to be held all night. So what do you do now? She wants to be held. He wants to go, you know, do something and, you know, have a cigarette or something. So how do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, again, it's an understanding that men and women are biologically different, so different. I mean, who puts it in and who receives it? Who has to open up? Who has to go up? There's so many differences to say we're not different. And part of the whole thing of men getting erections is it's a pointer. It goes in, which, by the way, we went over it very quickly. Listening is a pointer. Yes. See, if I listen to my wife, I'm going into her. I'm looking at her. That's a very masculine thing, as long as I don't take it personally. If I get upset with what she's saying, now it's about you should see what you did to me. Mm. That's a female energy.
Well, passive,
So listening is penetrating. It's a selflessness. It's a sacrifice. You give up yourself for women. That's what men have done for centuries. And yet we're seen as selfish. Yes, we all have selfishness. We all have our own needs. Yes. But men historically have done the dirty jobs, the dangerous jobs, the difficult jobs, and the deadly jobs. We're the ones that go out to war and all that stuff. Yes. So we are amazing and sometimes not so amazing, just as women are amazing and not so amazing sometimes. So there's no good or bad of men or women.
Right.
But back to the withdrawal that happens. When men have sex, what will happen biologically is when he has first of all, oxytocin is not what makes women enjoy it so much. It's the oxytocin increases the estrogen. It's the estrogen that gives her the pleasure and the love. And what women want is to feel that love. Okay, so that's the love. And when a man ejaculates, what occurs is the reason he ejaculates is as he's making love, the male-female energies are coming balanced within himself.
Yes.
Then at a certain point, the estrogen goes too high. Then he ejaculates. It's like a moment, oh, I want this to go on forever. I love you, I love you, I love you. And then it's done.
It's like a little death, they say, for the male once he has the climax.
Yeah, for the female, it's a little death, you know. And for men as well. So the man, after his testosterone levels, the estrogen goes so high, he has to disconnect to rebuild his testosterone. So there's a natural, the body, he doesn't think any of this. This is what the body does. The body has to pull away in order to be distant. Distance increases testosterone. So he pulls away to rebuild his testosterone. And then, so the next day, if you measure his testosterone, it's half. And then here's some amazing thing that's not in that book. It's in another book on enlightened sexuality.
Right.
And it's that I haven't written yet, but because I need research to back up my ideas. Otherwise, they sound so crazy, but they work. And this is the new research. They show that when a man ejaculates on a Saturday night, his testosterone goes down half. Mm. It slowly, over 6 days, starts to come back up a little. Mm. And that would be, if he went and got his testosterone tested, that would be his normal testosterone level. If he goes 6 days without ejaculating,
yes,
on the seventh day, it will double. He becomes the alpha male. His body produces pheromones that will awaken a woman's estrogen levels. There's nothing more powerful than a man with high testosterone producing this smell that goes into a woman, pheromones. Wow. And the women, her estrogen will go up. Now, women, when estrogen doubles, also produces pheromones, and that makes men's testosterone go up. So we this part of the brain, we have no control over. This is a monkey part of the brain. We're like monkeys when it comes to these hormones and smells, pheromones. So we even have an extra little nose in here that only has one job, to detect estrogen levels in women, and our erection comes up. So it's amazing. But what I'm saying here is one of the reasons, the many reasons couples want to have lasting passion and romance. Yes. If a man ejaculates more than one time every 7 days, his testosterone will stay low.
Interesting.
It will not double. So now men are doing this porn thing and their testosterone levels are just going lower and lower and lower and losing interest in their wives. And if they are having sex with their wives, they're thinking about the woman they saw on TV as opposed to their wife.
I remember back in the day, you were, I believe, celibate spiritually, and you were training with some spiritual teachers.
Yeah, I'm a 9 years celibate, pure celibate, never masturbated for 9 years in my 20s.
You must have a lot of testosterone energy at that time.
Massive. Oh, massive. I could sit in meditation for 18 hours. Wow. I could go for weeks without eating. Mm-hmm. Such willpower. You know, I did yoga, all these things as strength. I can't do the physical yoga, but I can do the mental yoga now. Okay. Yeah. But now it's I was celibate. I've learned how to do that in sex. Now I teach a special course for men how to have sex every day and not ejaculate. Oh, okay. How to have sex and create multiple orgasms in a woman. But these are all highly advanced techniques.
Yes.
The basic thing for everybody, just to have lasting passion and romance,
right,
is men, don't masturbate. If you've got a partner, don't masturbate. And if she doesn't want to have sex on Saturday night, have her masturbate you. You don't do it, so that she gets to experience your desire for her doubling. And it will double. And that will create her estrogen going up. Women only lose interest in sex because their estrogen is too low.
Right. So spiritual, like Tantra, I think, and other methods use that idea to conserve the...
back in the days of the Think and Grow Rich books, you know, the super self, they all talked about sexual sublimation, which is not releasing the semen for men.
Now, speaking of spirituality, I know you're a very spiritual man, and there's a concept called equally yoked in some religions, basically that you are similar levels of spirituality or consciousness. You've heard of David Hawkins, perhaps. He talks about the levels of consciousness.
Yes, yes.
Is it necessary? Do couples need to be at similar spiritual levels or a little bit above or below? Or can you find a partner that can raise your spiritual level? What do you think is the best combination in that sense?
I think it's a little different for everybody. For me as a man, the best is to be a higher.
Okay, a little bit. What if you're too high and she's very at the level of fear and anger? Is that going to work? Or can you bring her up?
I don't call level of fear and anger. I call that the emotional part of the brain. Mm. And women actually who are in the emotional part of the brain have the best orgasms. Mm. And that makes a man feel like alpha man. It's always been the case that women are attracted to more powerful men than them.
Yes.
It's always been the case that women are attracted more to wise men. Wise comes with age. When the man has a greater age than a woman, it's going to be easier in the relationship. She can look up to him more because that produces estrogen. Mm. Now, not that they have to be at different levels.
Right.
You know, I wrote a book called Mars Venus on a Date. Mm. And I talked about the importance is that you must be different from your partner to create attraction. So yes, whoever's higher or lower, there will be an attraction just because of that. If you're attracted, that's one of the reasons.
Right.
But values need to be the same. So let's say you're a woman of high spiritual status and a man is not.
Yes.
That difference is okay as long as you have a value for spirituality. So he will respect
her
spirituality. Or the man is more spiritual. In the case of me, that's been the case. Right. Then there's always been this added respect I get and massive appreciation for my spirituality. You know, and when I would meditate, you know, to have the fact that my wife admires the fact that I do that, okay? Because she can't do it like I can do it. Nobody can, very few people can meditate the way I meditate because I spent 9 years, you know, almost like a circus performer when it comes to meditation because it was my dedicated thing. What is that?
You do the lotus posture or any of those positions?
Oh, yeah, I did the lotus posture upside down, you know?
Wow. Okay.
I did that. I started yoga when I was 3 years old.
Probably. I do a little bit of that myself. I did some.
Good. But I'm not so much, personally, I'm not so much into the physical yoga as the mental yoga and the emotional yoga that I do now.
How about, you know, in Love University, we talk about loving energy without expectation, also known as agape, karuna, you know, and also different things that are very powerful. Now, the idea of being empathetic to your partner and having that kind of unconditional love, you think it's possible among adult relationships? Because we know we have it, parent to child, and even dogs. You know, people love dogs and they give unconditional love. Can you have that with a partner, this unconditional?
I think I learned the unconditional love after I had children. Mm-hmm. My children taught me unconditional love, and then I learned to give it to my partner.
Yes.
And I pretty much give unconditional love to everybody now. But there's stages of that, like we talk about, you know, the different levels. Many people are living in the stage in their life of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. So they get all these arguments about, oh, you're wrong, but you're right, but I'm right, you're wrong, right and wrong. There is right and wrong, okay? But do you live in that world, or can you elevate your consciousness to a level of what works and what doesn't work? So this could be right or wrong, but what's going to work and what can work better? Right. So you get out of the judgment level, and you can still say that's wrong or right and use that knowledge wisely, but you're really living in the place of, does it work for me right now to tell you you're wrong? Or would it work for me to let you know what I would like you to do in the future? So we get out of the world of trying to manipulate our ways of getting what we want by saying you're wrong and I'm right. And you move into a place of what works and what doesn't work. That's a non-judgmental place. Yes. When things then start working for you, mm-hmm. then you realize that you have the power all the time to get what you want. You're no longer a victim in life. When you transcend or go beyond any sense of I'm a victim of anything, yes. you're the source of your life, then you get into this non-judgmental place. You only judge people in order to say, to get what you want. So when you're getting what you want, and if what you want, for me, not like everything I want, I get, and I really want that, I don't get it, well, I'm patient. And sometimes I want this and it's definitely not gonna happen. There's forgiveness because there's no judgment. People do what they do, and it's not like I'm going to go do it again with that person either. You know, they rip me off. I go, okay, that's a place I don't need to go. I'll examine my thinking and process of how I got myself into that mess and what I can learn from that. And, you know, we all have issues. You're not on this planet if you don't have issues, and so life presents you with problems, so you grow.
Exactly. Now, John, one of the hardest things for people to deal with is love after death. Recently, we lost a great sports figure, Kobe Bryant here. I know you lost your wife. I lost my dad a few years ago. I had Ariel Ford on the show, and Ariel was talking about the widow, Richard Carson, the famous psychologist that wrote Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And she says that she always saw him in the clouds. You know, there was a very beautiful connection out there. What is your belief on that? Is there love after death? I mean, is there another plane, do you believe, or something like that?
Oh, I think for about 6 months, my wife kept talking to me.
Wow.
And she still talks to my daughter, Lauren. Yeah. And Lauren comes up with all these very pithy phrases that would come right out of her mother. You know, I'm the one who writes the books, but my wife was extremely wise, and she would say certain things out of the blue that blew my mind.
Wow. Was she your muse in a way, like inspiration?
I think maybe so. I think if you look at muse, you would say she was my muse because she's been gone. I haven't written another book yet.
Oh, no. We got to get you back in there. But I think
I'm going through the big grieving process. I will write a book on grieving.
Okay.
I wrote a book a long time ago called Healing the Heart, grieving the loss of a dream, a wife or a child. But this one will be focused on only just someone dies and all the things you go through.
Right. But I think leaving a legacy, you know, of love, that's the most beautiful thing, right? You create light in the world with your partner, and the memories and everything you've done, you will last far beyond that.
And, you know, I think what helps me go beyond that is certainly have all the gratitude and the appreciation. I think for a good year, I couldn't sleep. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and remember every argument we ever had, every disappointment she ever had, every problem that existed for us both. And I would look at and realize with the knowledge I have now and the love I feel for her now, I could have done that differently. And I learned from that. Oh, here's another way. So my wisdom maybe increased exponentially 10 times after her death by reevaluating every situation. Because see, when we have dynamics between couples, there's always a defensiveness, you know, where they're defending themselves, you're defending yourself. And when somebody's gone, they're not defending. All you have to do is look at yourself, and I look at my mistakes, and then I feel my love for her. And then I look at how I could have done that differently, and I make a commitment to do it differently in the future. And then by doing it differently in the future, I'm still with her, and I'm still giving her love.
It's beautiful. And also, you can help many people, you know, through your wisdom.
Oh, I'm dedicated. I'm not ready yet to write that book, but I need a little bit more healing on the whole thing. But sure. I do know it needs to be written, because so many people, they found scientifically that people become addicted to grieving.
Wow.
Okay, so there's some people who are in denial. They just go about like it didn't happen. That's a problem. But there's another problem of people more today have learning to grieve. But grieving is a massively addictive thing. Hmm. They found in brain scans of grieving parents who lost a child 15 years later, 20 years later, that when they are grieving, they see in an MRI, they see the part of the brain that lights up when you're taking cocaine. Hmm. It's an addiction.
That's a repetitive kind of thing that people do.
Yeah, it's like complaining is an addiction, but right. Grieving is a bigger addiction.
Wow. Now, Glasser wrote Positive Addiction, the book. You may remember that.
Yes, I remember Glasser.
Also, Mihaly wrote about flow, you know, the idea that you get into these peak states. So I think, you know, love.
There's a thing about rewiring the brain when you have an addiction, which is another book out there. You should have this guest. Her name, I know the name of the book is Wired for Healing. Okay. Wired for Healing is you get addicted to trauma. Your brain goes over it and over and over it. And now you try to avoid trauma. And that makes the addiction even stronger to think about it and have it affect you. Mm-hmm. And it creates all kinds of diseases. And my daughter was gluten intolerant. And she did this 6-month program, and she's not gluten intolerant anymore. Her body, she no longer takes anything for her health. And she used to take thyroid medication. She doesn't need to take that anymore. I mean, this kid is a whole new person once she learned to rewire her brain from some traumas that she had in the past. Because the brain is plastic. Yes. And so, I mean, it will move. It's plasticity, brain plasticity, and allows you to grow neural connectors. Right. So in my grieving process for my wife, every time I feel the pain, I don't resist it. Mm-hmm. I embrace it. And right. then I come back to feeling the love and feeling the appreciation. And then how I'm going to grow from that frees me from the addiction.
Exactly. Well, John, that has been a tremendous pleasure. We can go on for a long time. You're a treasure to society, to humanity. You've done amazing work.
I want to acknowledge you as well. Very few interviewers actually read my books. They just interviewed me, and you read it, and you took out some really key points for people. And I want to say to people, now you hit the bottom line of a point. Sometimes you need to read the whole chapter to really accept that. So if we push some buttons in people, they should read the book and get the bigger picture.
Oh, well, yeah. Where can we find you, a website and all the stuff that you have?
Thank you. I'm at marsvenus.com. Yes. If you did a Google search for me, you'd probably find it as well. Marsvenus.com, or name my book, it would come up. And if you go to my website, there's a free gift. There's a whole seminar that I teach, and you get a whole follow-up with it and everything called How to Get What You Want. It's right there on the front page. Yeah. And you can get more practical tips.
Fantastic. Well, John, I'd love to have you on again. And if you're in LA, I'd love to collaborate with you on a seminar. We do live university talks as well.
And, fantastic. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And have a wonderful, lovely energy day.
Thank you. You too. Have a great day.
That was a great interview with Dr. John Gray, the illustrious self-help author. And the idea is that men and women are different, but also we're similar in that we all want the deepest love, the deepest happiness, the deepest success in life. And by respecting each other's differences, and whether it's testosterone, estrogen, thinker or feeler, logical, spontaneous, we can really develop great relationships to have balance, even a psychological androgyny, where we can tap into the other sides of ourselves. That's a wonderful thing. So again, Love University students, if you have questions for today's show, if you'd like to be on the show, or if you'd like to meet your soulmate, we actually have a program now where you can actually write into us, send us your picture, a little bit about yourself, and we'll indicate what your love type is so you can find that right compatible person. You can write to us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Call us at 310-226-8090. Like us on Facebook at Love University Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Love Letter U Podcast. So again, the message is we're all unique, we're all special, and we can really reach that deep love within. Listen to us every Wednesday, noon, Love University Podcast, Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, everywhere else, and of course, YouTube. Until next time, please put away your books, your notepads, your iPads. Have a great Love University week. Dr. Avila.